are with The Shilling Show weekdays from noon to 2. It's the place to be and the talk of the town. Thanks for joining us here on 1070 WINA. 977-1070 is the phone number. You are welcome here anytime. Hey, I'm pleased to welcome to The Shilling Show Josh Brom, president of the Equal Rights Institute. And we're going to be talking today about clear pro-life thinking. Josh will be here as a speaker at the Pregnancy Centers of Central Virginia Candlelight Banquet this weekend, and we welcome him here today to The Shilling Show. Hi, Josh.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's good to be here.
All right, so I guess I got to start out by asking you, how and when did pro-life and the pro-life movement become important to you?
When I was 11 years old, my dad took me outside an abortion clinic to pray with a group of men from our church. While we were there, another group across the street had brought some signs with graphic pictures of abortion victims. I wasn't traumatized by the pictures. I just didn't understand what they were. I hadn't been told what abortion was yet. I was a little bit kind of over-sheltered, homeschooled kid. I didn't know what abortion was. And so I just asked what it was, and I was told, you know, that day by my awesome parents, what abortion is. And I remember feeling very, very sad and surprised that people would want to do that, and kind of a sense that I want to stop that. So at 11 years old, I was telling people that I was going to be a pro-life speaker when I grew up, and 20 years later, here I am.
You know, I think if we want to get to the bottom of anything, we look at it through the eyes of innocence of a child, and for all the children that I've ever seen at these events or had a chance to listen to on the subject, they're just absolutely astounded that somebody would do that. And yet as adults, we grow up, and not all of us, but many adults grow up and rationalize this, or they've been taught by their parents there's nothing wrong with it, or it's not human. It's just, I don't know, I think it's hard to get past the honest reaction of a child, because the reaction you had is the truth.
Yeah, I'll just add that I think now I understand pro-choice people a lot better than I did then. When I was 11, that was so outside of kind of the cultural environment that I'd grown up in. But I think it's really important for pro-life people to work really hard to understand where pro-choice people are coming from, which is hard, because pro-choice people are coming from sometimes hundreds of different places. But now I feel like, after having spent a lot of time with even pro-choice friends and reading the best stuff they have, I've got a much better sense now of where they're coming from, which helps us to respond better to the best arguments they have to offer.
You know, at the website, you have Clear Pro-Life Thinking as the title. That must be in response to something you witnessed, which, what, is unclear or muddled pro-life thinking?
Yeah, I think a lot of times, and I don't want to make a blanket statement like all pro-lifers are muddled thing, but I think both sides have people that are using very good arguments. I think both sides have people who are not using very good arguments. And I know that the word effectiveness is kind of corporate buzzword bingo. Everybody talks about being effective.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about abortion, this is a life or death thing. Like, you're being an effective ambassador for this issue really matters, and clearly some arguments are better than others. There's some really bad pro-life arguments that don't make sense. They're not persuasive to pro-choice people. So for me, the proof's in the pudding. If what we're saying helps people to become pro-life, then that's great. But if we're saying things that don't help people to become pro-life, then I want to find things that will. So a lot of my work is in analyzing the arguments we use, using them on college campuses with, you know, thousands of pro-choice people, and kind of doing R&D, testing, you know, field testing the things that we say and identifying the things that aren't working that well so we can go back to the drawing board.
Let's talk about some of the less effective or poor muddled thinking from the pro-life side. Give us a couple examples.
From the pro-life side?
Yes.
Yeah, so the worst pro-life argument, never ever use this, is that abortion's wrong because it may have killed the cure of cancer or the next Beethoven, or something like that.
Okay.
This is bad reasoning for a couple of reasons. One, it works both ways. Abortion may also have killed future rapists, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's not persuasive. But secondly, and more importantly, it plays into a pro-choice worldview. I mean, kind of one of the major parts of the debate is human value intrinsic? Are you valuable because of the kind of thing you are? Or is your value instrumental based on what you can do functionally or how you help society? And so when we kind of go with this, like, well, abortion, you know, think of all the people that have been killed from abortion and what they could have done for society. That plays into a pro-choice worldview. A pro-life view says that we're all equally valuable regardless of what they can do functionally because of the kind of thing we are.
Let's have another one, because I know there are probably a couple that we ought to get out on the table here.
Yeah. So another one, and this is a little bit trickier because there's a because this is actually a truth statement, but we just have to be very careful in the way we use it. I think we need to be careful in the way that we talk about abortion hurting women, because I think abortion does hurt women. I have lots of friends who are post-abortive and have suffered either physically or emotionally or both, and I think they're important to talk about. I think that's an important element of this discussion is how does abortion affect women. However, I don't think a good argument for making abortion illegal is coming at it from the place of abortion hurting women. Abortion should be illegal because abortion hurts women, because there's all kinds of things that hurt women that should be legal, like smoking cigarettes, for example. And all the other side has to do, and they have recently, is produce lists of thousands of women who say that abortion is the best decision they ever made. So there's kind of a war of anecdotes. Who's got the most stories of abortion helping them versus hurting them? I'd rather go with something more solid. What is the thing being killed? What is the nature, the moral status of the entity being killed? Because everyone knows something dies in an abortion. The question is it something that morally matters? And focus on that.
We're talking with Josh Brom, president of the Equal Rights Institute. Give us the website, Josh, if people want to go visit you online.
Yeah, if people want to learn more about our organization, they can go to equalrightsinstitute.com. And we also have a blog at joshbrom.com where we've got about a year's worth of materials on practical dialogue tips and relational apologetics.
When we come back on the other side, there was a very interesting chart, a study that I saw on your website regarding why women have abortions. And I want to talk about that on the other side. Also want to mention that Josh will be the featured speaker at the Pregnancy Centers for Central Virginia Candlelight Banquet this coming weekend, and so you'll have a chance to hear him at greater length then. The Shilling Show, back with Josh Brom and you, 977-1070, right after this. Coming up in the next hour, Dr. Charles Battig will be with us combating the global warming myths. We continue right now here on The Shilling Show with Josh Brom, president of the Equal Rights Institute, Clear Pro-Life Thinking. I saw some interesting charts on your site about why women have abortions and kind of dispelling some myths about the argument of bodily integrity or that's my body.
I believe that most women having abortions aren't necessarily doing it because in their mind they're thinking about philosophical bodily autonomy arguments. However, I think the bodily autonomy arguments are the most intelligent pro-choice arguments that exist for justifying abortion being legal in the first place. And a big part of our work is trying to help pro-life people to understand those arguments and to respond to them better than we have in the past.
So as we look at that particular argument, and we've seen the bumper stickers, you know, keep your hands off my body and so forth.
Right.
What is the appropriate response?
Yeah, so it's hard to respond adequately to a philosophical argument in a soundbite, but the kind of the soundbite version or the short version would be this. We definitely have common ground about bodily integrity. Bodily integrity is very important, and generally speaking, you should have the right to do what you want with your body. I think the question is, are there exceptions to that, like when other people would be harmed? For example, there is a drug that used to be given in the late 50s and early 60s. It was mainly in Europe, but it happened in America, too, called thalidomide. Thalidomide is an anti-nausea drug. It's a cancer drug, but it was given for a while to pregnant women who had severe morning sickness because they thought it had less side effects than everything else. Unfortunately, the medical community didn't realize that if you give thalidomide to a pregnant woman, her child will be born with severe fetal defects. They will be born without arms or legs. And as soon as they figured out this cosmetic relationship, of course, they pulled thalidomide off the market. You can't get thalidomide if you're pregnant. So one of the questions we might ask a pro-choice person who thinks that a woman should have the absolute right to bodily autonomy is, should she have the right to thalidomide? And many don't think that she should, because I think a lot of pro-choice people have already kind of made up their mind and harden their conscience against abortion, but they haven't thought about thalidomide before. They haven't thought about the idea, should we take drugs that would cause fetal defects? And it seems like if you shouldn't be allowed to take a drug that would cause your child to be born without arms, it seems like you probably also shouldn't be able to dismember your child in an abortion.
There was something kind of amusing on your website. You talked about pro-life people acting weird in what you referred to as fetus tunnel vision. Could we talk a little bit about how that is that people act weird, or at least are perceived that way?
Yeah, we've got a motto, don't be weird, DBW. And when I say weird, like there's certain good kinds of weird. I mean, the fact that we're even talking about this or that there's people spending their entire lives fighting abortion, there's something mm-hmm. weird about that. That's a good kind of weird. Fighting injustice is a good kind of weird. When I say weird, like probably shouldn't be weird, I just mean like I think some pro-life people come across kind of odd and abrasive, and that's not helpful. And so a really good example of that, I think, is something that we call fetus tunnel vision. So every 9/11... my Facebook wall is filled with pro-life people who mean well, saying, you know, well, it's kind of like 9/11 was bad, but did you know that 3,000 abortions happen every day? Just like 3,000 people died on 9/11, or, you know, a school shooting happens, or like anything tragic where several people die, a lot of pro-life people kind of want to kind of juke that and compare it to abortion. And I think the problem is it kind of comes across to pro-choice people like we don't care about any other time that people die. I do think sometimes it's legitimate to make comparisons. I've made statistical comparisons to 9/11 just to help get the daily abortion stat number kind of in people's minds or help them to kind of understand that. But I'm really careful in the way I do it. And I don't think on the anniversary of 9/11 we should be making a bunch of abortion comparisons. I think if we want to come across as normal people, we should be saying things like, wasn't 9/11 tragic? We will never forget, et cetera. And then maybe other days, say, did you know that as many people that died on 9/11 died in abortion today?
I wanted to ask you about something you referenced early on in the discussion, and that is the graphic pictures. And I know there are some people who get super offended by that, and there are others who think that, you know, we need to look at what it is we're calling legal in this country and what we're doing. What are your thoughts on graphic pictures?
I think there's a time and place for them. We use them in all of our seminars. We're designing a brochure that we're going to use on college campuses with the person's consent when we feel like it's the right time of the conversation for them. Ask them if they'd be willing to see a medically accurate picture of what abortion is or hear a medically accurate definition of abortion. We're in a process of doing some testing for a while to see if campus outreaches go better if we don't put the graphic pictures on big signs. I don't think it's wrong. I'm not like, you know, people who put them on signs are morally wrong or anything. We're just questioning what is going to be the most effective outreach. I think there's a lot of arguments on both sides, and we're in a place that's like, we just want to do some testing. We feel like there's been a lot of testing of graphic picture outreaches on college campuses, and I've been part of many of them. So I spent years and years kind of doing that, and now we're kind of interested in seeing what happens when we keep the graphic pictures in a brochure. Is it possible that we can still show those pictures to people, but at a time when it'll be more helpful for them? And if we find out that doesn't work very well, we'll probably go back to putting graphic pictures on the signs. But we're in a place of R&D for the next couple of years.
Josh Brom, what is the pro-life end game? What is the work that you are striving to see accomplished?
I would love to see abortion become both unthinkable and illegal. I think abortion one day should be thought of as like cannibalism. We shouldn't even talk about that anymore. Of course, we're not going to do that. And of course, I think the unborn should also be protected by law, because I think that there are some people that will be willing to have abortions regardless of what society thinks. I think we have a long way to go before we get there.
You know, we hear a lot of politicians saying, well, you know, I personally am opposed to this, but I don't think that we should be getting religion involved with those sorts of decisions on a legal level. And I wanted your response to that.
I reject that this is a religious issue. This is a moral issue. I don't think, like, you know, the fact that people were against slavery and a lot of them were Christians does not make slavery a religious issue. It's just a human rights thing. Sex slavery is a human rights thing. I'm against human rights injustices. So I don't think this is a religious issue. I do think we need to do a better job of making a non-religious case in the public square. I think a lot of people think it's a religious issue because sometimes pro-life people kind of resort to Psalm 139 and Jeremiah 1:5 when kind of grounding their defense for human value. But if we can show people this is a moral issue and not a religious one, then of course it should be something that should be talked about in politics, in the public square.
Josh Brom, give us your websites once again, please.
Yeah, equalrightsinstitute.com, and our blog is joshbrom.com.
welcome you to Charlottesville here in a couple of days. And thank you so much, Josh Braum, for joining us today on The Shilling Show.
Thanks so much for having me. I can't wait to visit your city.
Yeah, it'll be a terrific evening.